Yeah.
You guys ready?
Guys, good afternoon. My name is Bill Brown. I'm a recovered crack cocaine addict.
Hey, Bill.
And my sobriety date is June 26th of 2013. And if you're sick of Brandon, who was up here a minute ago, I've got good news. He was just bumped by Tarek. If you're sick of me, I've got bad news. I'm still here. We're going to have some fun, though, over the next hour. So, guys, we're moving from third step into the fourth step. Tarek and I specifically have been asked to cover resentment. We were talking about this yesterday, and there's one of two ways we can go here. We can talk about the mechanics of writing of the inventory, and that may sneak into some dialogue. It may not. I don't really know what's going to happen. Or we could talk about the effect produced by going through this process and however it plays out. Through four-step writing, through all the way through amends as it connects down the road at some point. And we're going to kind of talk about some of our personal experiences with resentment and resentment inventory, and we'll see what happens. So that's kind of what we have in mind. Any other way you would say it?
You know, there's a statement in the book that I referenced last night, and I'm Tarek, I'm an addict.
Tarek.
It says the first, you know, a personality's change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism or addiction. So to me, when I hear the words personality change, I immediately go to this idea of a psychic change. Well, for me personally, I can't speak for Bill, but my psychic change began the first time I wrote a resentment inventory. And of course, the fifth step's an important part of that. So it's really hard to talk about this. So we may allude to the fifth step. We're not going to really talk about fifth steps, but there's a connection that happens between four and five, specifically the bridge between the third column to the fourth column. You know, the book talks about going from bridge to shore. You got to have access to power to go from a third to a fourth column. And we'll get to that. Sometimes Bill and I may say things like, oh, we'll get to that later on. That usually means I'm probably not going to get to it later on, but we'll do our best.
For sure. That's my experience also. Guys, I'm not going to be doing a ton of reading from the literature, more referencing, although in this first part, I'm going to capture a paragraph or so with some things. At the very bottom of page 63, if you're wondering when the appropriate time to start your fourth step is, I'm going to give you a time frame. So it starts off by saying next. Now you can take that in and of itself and do this next, which is now, right away. And if you're still stuck, I'll bring you there in a second. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action. Guys, that course of action is going to be steps 4 through 9, steps 4 through 12, whatever. But the first step is not step 1, as it says in the very last. The first step is the fourth step. The first step in the vigorous course of action, and that's what we're talking about here, which is personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Why would I do that anyway? Though our decision in the third step was vital, which to me is my life depends on it, and crucial, which means it's really important, okay? It will have little permanent effect. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not in this thing just to see what happens today. I'm not just hoping this week goes good and then I don't pick up. The book talks about in the foreword of the second edition, Dr. Bob references, talks about working with others. Are you done for good and all? That's the deal. Do you want permanent recovery? Can we make a commitment and do this work and stay on the path? Because if I don't make a commitment, I'm not staying. That's my experience and it doesn't need to be yours. Permanent effect, guys, this third step decision, unless, here's the other time frame, at once. So if you're wondering now when to start your fourth step, somewhere between next and at once. Do you have any questions? That's what the book says. I'm going to follow this literature. This is my out. Followed by strenuous effort, real intensive work, to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us from the power of God, from the sunlight of the from the Spirit. Guys, that's what we're talking about. And now, I'm going to be a little, my defenses are going to pop up. I'm going to be a little confused because, again, I walk in here thinking crack cocaine is my problem. Now it's going to tell me that's just but a symptom, right? And so these things are changing. The dialogue is changing. Now my experience changes. I have to get down to causes and conditions. I'm looking for patterns now, guys. I'm going to start having those things show up in inventory. That's kind of where we're going to get started. Guys, you know, and I was thinking about this earlier on driving up here. Tarek and I sit before you excited about this literature, just like Brandon and I, excited about recovery. You know, we may have some different approaches to some things, but what we do is we follow the guidelines and the dictates and these rules and directions in this book. You know, there's going to be some, we're going to see out there in the room some different style of inventory showed up. Someone's going to give you a blank notebook and say, start writing, cowboy, cowgirl. Someone's going to hand you a Joe and Charlie style. Someone's going to hand you a Big Book Awakening style. Someone's going to hand you a style. I've watched their style evolve over the last few years. There's going to be some general kind of overarching principles that must be followed. Is it thorough? Is it honest? Is it on paper? Those are just a few, right? What this is about to introduce to me is the truth. Guys, it's inventory. That's it. This was not a therapeutic exercise for you. I mean, for me. If it's for you, you should seriously look at getting into accounting. If you're fired up by this stuff, rock on. Look into that field. It's not therapeutic for me, but it was crucial that I did that. It was absolutely essential and vital. But it's inventory, and that is my experience. And it tells me that if I don't do this regularly, I'm in trouble. And if a business doesn't, they're going to go broke. I see that metaphor today. Taking an inventory is fact-finding, that would make it searching, and fact-facing, that would make it fearless. And that's just kind of how we get started. And again, we're tasked with introducing resentment, and it tells me in the middle of page 64 that myself is going to be manifested in various ways. One of these ways, here it is, it's resentment. It's going to be resentment. I was looking that up a little bit before. I'd always heard it from a Latin phrase, and it comes from a French word, ressentir. Did I pull that off? Thank you. Latin, sentire, is to feel. Resent, to re-feel. I'm playing something over and over again, and I don't like how it makes me feel. It's bugging me. He's bugging me. The IRS continues to piss me off. This is eating my lunch. I'm gossiping about this person now. And those are the things that show up in a resentment inventory for this addict and alcoholic sitting in front of you. It tells me, guys, that this is the number one offender. Here's a death threat. It destroys more alcoholics and addicts than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. I just want to share something with you. I want to open up an experience, and I'm going to see if Tarek has anything to jump in. Guys, so resentment can kind of be a springboard for spiritual disease. And I think about that. What does that really look like for me? When we get into nine-step amends, one of the first pieces it introduces is the enemy, the person I dislike. Well, what inventory do you think that comes from? In my case, resentment. That person was on my resentment list. Now, here's the deal. When I do this little step 8 and 9 workshop every 3 to 4 weeks at the place I work with newcomers regularly. For the first 3 years of my recovery, every time I went through that part of the dialogue on amends, I got the feeling some type of way. Makes sense? I feel like I'm mentally throat punching this person. Get it? That's spiritual disease manifesting in me when I re-feel it, because it's still there, and it's been showing up over and over. Now, this is a cat that I need to get with at some point that lives in the state of Maine, and I go up there twice a year. I've been making amends when I go up there through the process of living life. That's coming, and I know it. It's softened recently through some step work, etc., and I'll kind of get to that in a little bit. But that's how it shows up. That's not how God wants me to feel. That's not how God wants me to think of his kids who I've already harmed. That's not how God wants me to be today. And I've got some work to do, because self continues to show up, even as the spiritual gangster sitting before you, right? And that's what it looks like, man. So what I've done is given this guy some space in my mind. Right? And I used to use the word, I've let him rent space, but that's not the truth. See, if I look at renting, it implies an exchange. of goods and services at some point. Anyone ever here been, just a question. I don't know. I can't tell by looking at you. Anyone here ever been to a pawn shop? Okay, that's more than half. Good. Guys, it's not like I'm fronting the stolen jewelry to the pawn guy. I expect something back. But I'm going to rent this. I'm going to give this guy space, and guess what I get in return? Spiritual disease and nothing more. And that's really what I'm talking about here, and that's how it shows up in me.
For years, I thought you had the, you know, I stumbled across this method of inventory that I just thought was the be-all and the end-all. And to me, it's sort of like consumes you with self, always examining all these stage characters. I know it's important to understand where we're over-identified, where our overthinking is happening. But we're not losing people because they're not writing specific types of inventory. We're losing people because they're not writing inventory. Yeah. And so when we arrive here, we are garbage cans. But there's a lot of good stuff about everybody sitting in this room. We're not entirely garbage. And so a lot of this process is finding out what is good, inherently good about you, and finding out what has to be removed and stands in your way of, I call it having the veil removed, so the light can shine through you. Some individuals are veiled to the extreme to where there is nothing that can shine through because they're so overly identified with their resentments at the end of the day. And so it's like going to the dentist. You got to drill before you can fill. And this is a drilling process. But I'm also convinced due to the life situations that I've moved through that were extremely painful emotionally, you know, my friends helped nurse me back to health through a lot of those times. But there had to be a place to store the emotional pain that I was going through. And the only way that I had created room was the work that had been done over time that created the room, which was the drilling before we can fill. You know, we always think we're filling with the light, and to some degree we are, but sometimes we're filling with darkness. And it's got to be stored too, and some of us have a capacity to embody that and to move through it and live it in such a way that we're not trying to do everything under the sun to distract ourselves from what is going on inside of us. And that's what the inventory process, I heard a man say one time, and I loved him. If you don't do this process, when it comes time to walk up the mountain, you will not be able to take the master's hand and walk up the mountain. Because the mountains are coming for all of us. And this is where this process begins. It also, there's one of my favorite lines in our big book is we turn back to the list where it holds the key to the future. When I'm sponsoring guys, I always ask them, why do you think it holds the key to the future? Does anyone want to take a stab at it? And Lindsay, you can't answer. Who thinks they know why this list holds the key to the future? Then it says we're prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. Okay, because I spent my life, I was the judge and the assigner of blame. The judge and the assigner of blame. And for me, in that first inventory, what I discovered was my hypocrisy. In discovering my inherent hypocrisy in life began my psychic change. When I came out of my first fifth step, one of the things that this guy Randy had drilled into me that every trouble was of my own making. That any time in the future when I get into some shit, that I needed to look at me, and that was going to be the source of hope for me. Why we call that the greatest statement of hope in the big book is because the world and the people in it don't have to change for Bill and Tarek to be okay. Not if we're able to look at things from an entirely different angle. Oh, I'm in a world of hurt. I'm in a world of pain. Well, what did I do at some point in the past that has now put me in this decision, this place to be hurt? Oh, I didn't clean my closet like I was supposed to, right? That's the example Bill gave us in the previous session. And so we get to this sentence, the key to the future. I don't know about anybody else in here. I can only speak for myself. But check this out. Prior to the 12 steps, specifically the resentment inventory process, I'd gone through life this way. You did something to piss me off. I'm the victim, right? So I knew who was in column one, you. I knew how what you had done, like my mind could create a scenario of what you did that affected me. And then if you said, Tarek, how does this affect you? And you asked me to talk about my pride and my self-esteem and what I wanted and what I needed, you know, and my thoughts around how the personal relationships in my life were affected. And was my manhood affected? Was money affected? I could talk to you all day long about being the victim. But that's where it stopped. And then I get to this process, and on page 67, the most important part of this inventory process, referring to our list again. Remember, the list holds the key to the future. Putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. It doesn't say my part. I want to point that out. That's watered down AA and watered down CA. Nothing about my part. Where had I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely my fault, I disregarded the other person involved entirely. That means I took 100% ownership, not a part. Where was I to blame? The inventory is mine, not the other man or woman's. I had to see my faults, so I listed them. I placed them before me in black and white. So the first time I wrote inventory, I did a Joe and Charlie. Why am I angry? Who am I angry at? Why am I angry? How did it affect my instincts and all that? So I checked the third column. But fortunately for me, my fourth column had five sentences I had to write. What was I afraid of? How had I been dishonest? How had I been inconsiderate? How had I been selfish? And how had I been self-seeking? And that's why I discovered the hypocrisy. And now I had a new pathway of thinking was beginning in my mind. Psychic change. Remember, but prior to this, my entire life was your fault. Right? Everything was your fault. But now I'm introduced with this new method of, okay, stop. How did you create this? How did you set the ball rolling? Let's set aside entirely what the other person had done. Let's look at your own mistakes and your own faults. Even being molested at 5 years old by a family member. Okay? And so let me talk about this. So I wrote that inventory. I was resentful. Because I'd been molested from the age of 5 to 7. What did that 5-year-old do that made that trouble of his own making? Absolutely nothing. But what did that person do for the next... So I was, what, 31 years old? For 26 years, what had I done? Maybe not 26, more like 18 or 19. Right? I justified my behavior behind what happened to me when I was 5, 6, and 7 years old. I thought the world owed me something because of what happened to me when I was 5, 6, 7 years old. The reality, this is where Randy really got me. He's like, so this happened this long ago. Why is it still true in the present moment? It's not happening to you right now. It happened to you when you were 5, 6, and 7. And things began to change for me. But then when I wrote the fourth column and I realized that this individual, when they turned 18 years old, they left home and never came back. What do you think clicked when Randy and I were talking? You know, what makes a person turn 18 years old, leave their home, move to the complete other side of the country? Something most likely was happening in that home, right? So compassion was born. And I was no longer identified with what happened to me at 5, 6, 7 years old. And then, recently I was sitting in on a workshop of a friend of mine. And she had been, her uncle had done things to her, right? And I will never forget this. It was one of the most powerful things. Her sponsor taking her through the steps said to her, so when you are driven by your addiction, let me get this straight, you do things you don't want to do, right? And you hurt people when you don't want to do it. But you're like compelled by this force inside of you. Right? And you can't do anything. Once that thought comes, you can't do anything to do other than what the thought is telling you to do. That's how your addiction works. And she's like, yeah, absolutely. Say, Joe, you didn't really mean to hurt all those people, did you? They were just in your way when you were not being able to control yourself because of what addiction does to you. She said, yeah, absolutely. So let me get this straight. Do you think your uncle could suffer from an addiction that also puts him in the position where he does things to people where he doesn't want to, no matter how great his necessity or wish not to do so? And I was floored. So the same rule has to apply, but we're people who believe rules only apply at certain times. These are laws. And I got free in that first resentment inventory of that. Right? Because I wasn't looking for my part. I was looking for the mistakes that I had made as a result of that situation, that one act in the drama of life called Tarek's life. Right? And so what happens to you, and they relate this to making amends, and this is all I'm going to say about making amends. Let's say I go into my resentment inventory looking for my part. Right? And then when I go to make my 8-step list, the majority of it comes from my resentment inventory, right? And so when I go to make this amends, of course, I'm there to clean up my part. Let's assume this is the entire exchange between me and the other person. And I'm there to clean up my part. That's my part. This is the other person's part. It's always going to be that way, unconsciously or consciously. And so naturally, when I go make my amends and I want to clean up my part, the other person should naturally want to clean up their part, right? And so what happens when they don't? And in a lot of cases, they don't. I walk out of a 9-step amends with resentment. Right? Some people call it semantics, but if you pay attention and you're really listening in meetings, and because I run a program and I watch these guys that go make... I had a guy go make a 9-step amends, and... the guy, the person he made his amends to, handed him his ass. And he described it to me on the phone. I was like, well, did you ask him all the questions? Did you ask what you could do to make it right? When you asked him how he felt, he handed you your ass, right? He's like, yeah. He's like, but I felt so bad. Right? None of this is supposed to feel good. None of it. Do you guys get that? It's not a process about feeling better. It's a process that accesses power so you can be free. Right? None of this is supposed to be comfortable, including this resentment inventory. Because this is where we discover we're not victims.
Okay. And I'd like to introduce the idea, can we somehow shut down the stigma attached to 4-step inventory? By looking at the people's faces, wow, you're getting ready to work on your 4-step. If I were to just capture what I see on someone's face when we bring that up, you think they're going to spend 8 hours a day for the next 6 months working on that thing, you know? And it's why have we done that? I don't think it needs to be that way. So I would suggest, this is just my experience, and I'm not saying this is what you're doing or not doing. But if some weeks have gone by, and your answer is, hey, how's it going on your 4-step? Oh, I'm working on my 4-step. Oh, no, you're not. No, you're not. You're sitting on your 4-step. Now, you might be working on it, but I found most people are sitting on it. And that's my experience in working with newcomers. And it's also my experience, my first time doing this. And I was looking at the bottom of page 65. It says, nothing counted. Actually, that part's gone. Is it counted or counts? I think counted. It's been removed.
Counted.
Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. Because I left intentionally a lot of things off my first 4-step inventory. And between my first run at inventory and my second, the only reason I can come up with that makes any sense to me is why I didn't pick up in between is God's grace. And God's grace only. Because I got the results of that. It was as if I should have just ripped it up and burned it. Because it didn't count. The 5th step, some of the dialogue says, I'm going to get loaded if I'm intentionally leaving some of these things up. That's what we think. I can go on and I can go, bumps. You know, like 19 sponsees in my first month. But I left a whole bunch off intentionally. They say, I'm going to get loaded. That's what we think. And that's one of those overarching principles I need to bring to the table. Do I believe my life really depends on it? And so what? My experience is I've heard a bunch of 5th steps. Through 4-step inventory, really nothing new. It's not the big bad wolf. I think we need to lower that standard we put on it in terms of, oh boy, oh the 4-step. Why? Just something I wanted to bring out. So Tarek had alluded to this before, and he mentioned to conclude that, I believe he did, conclude that others were wrong were as far as most of us ever got. And that's my experience. I didn't need more than that. I wasn't looking for more than that. I wasn't in a space where I was in recovery and looking to save my life. I was just surviving and looking to get to the next day. And I was, man, that's just the space I was in. Why would I look for anything further than that? I gave you an example before in the 3rd step about being removed from my career one day, walked down the hall, they took my keys and sent me to my car. And man, that's an example here too. I held a resentment against the university where I worked because what they never did was prove that I did what they say I did. So I found that they were wrong. Because first of all, they never even told me why they fired me, although I'm pretty sure I know why. But they were wrong in this way because they never did their job. They never proved it was wrong. Now, keep in mind, here are some things. Bill, did you borrow $50 from a student? Yes. Here I go with my own questions to myself. I did. Did you tell her you'd pay her back? Yes. Did you? No. Had you been paid between the times when you were fired and when you borrowed it? Yes. Was she expecting that money? She was. Is it possible that there's an ethical violation from a faculty borrowing money from a student? Yes. Did you borrow from more than just one student? Yes. Did you borrow from colleagues? Yeah. See where this is going? See why they took my keys? I did. I'm a guy that was the chronic, look for my own hand. I got to look for my part, look for my part. I just fell victim to what we hear in the rooms, but I don't see where it says that in my book. And I'm a guy that I swear, Chris Raymer was looking at me when he spoke these words at the Fellowship of the Spirit, where I heard him for the first time. And he said, we look for our mistakes. And then he looked away from me. I don't think he was looking at me. But it sure felt like he's burning holes in my face. And I learned something that day, man. And now I got that guy in my book, double underlined and starred. And I've changed my approach to this thing, and it brings some clarity, which is real important here for me. Because now I can see my mistake. Now I got some ownership, and it's not just what I think I see or what I want to see. And that is my experience with that. It goes on to say, down on page 66, first full paragraph, it is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads to only futility and unhappiness. And I was thinking of, you know, futility. I always think of that as uselessness and unhappiness. And so my wife chronically leaves her coffee cups in the house. I mean, she drank from it. And I know she did because there's a little coffee in the bottom of the cup. And she'll just leave it at any given table. That'll burn me. That'll get to me at any given day. And it's almost every day. Now, last night, she and her mom cleaned our entire house. They spent hours cleaning our home, which was amazing. I'm so grateful for that, and I appreciate that. And I didn't have to really do anything. But damn it, this morning, I was looking for that cup. And I found that cup. You know, and it's, I'm the guy, I'm going to have a sharp word or a little bit of an attitude and be like, she'll be like, hey, what's going on? Oh, just cleaning up from last night, or whatever, you know? And that will go on, and I'll start a fight. And I was thinking about that, and it talks about, man, you know, but the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win, and I'll win with a sharp hammer. I do. Is that actually another tool? Is that a saw? A sharp hammer? I don't even know. A hatchet. I'll grab a hammer because that's what I do. And I've got a sharp word because, damn it, I win. For just a second, because our moments of triumph are short-lived. And I hurt that woman. And I can tell because I see it in her face and I see it in her attitude. And that's what, you know, and that's what it looks like for me. And it is short-lived. And now I'm treating God's kids not the way God wants me to. And now, again, I'm provoking resentment in someone else by the way I'm kind of living my life. And it kind of shows up here for me. And what I do, instead of loving this woman and enjoying our time together, I squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. That's how it shows up today. 5 years spiritual giant sober, right? Coffee cup. And those are the things that can creep up on me. And this kind of, you know, this kind of leads in a little bit to recent inventory that I've done. I talked about kind of re-feeling, and I can relate to that. I have to understand what that is. I use the 10th step when these things crop up. Thing is, it's when they crop up again and again and again. And I can go through that, but what I'm doing is I'm still refeeling it. I wrote inventory very recently, and it was the first time in a while. I noticed some things showing up in resentment, and I know some things showing up in harms that were unattended. And where it got down to, guys, and this is what has changed in my approach to this thing, I remember calling my sponsor. I was intuitively kind of moved one day while at work. And I get on the phone. I said, "Joe, you got a minute? I need to talk to you." "Sure, what you got?" "I'm interested in writing some inventory. But I want to tell you up front, I don't want to tell you what I'm going to tell you. Because that's not supposed to happen to me, don't you know? I'm supposed to be God-centered today, less self-centered. I'm supposed to be doing all these things. I'm supposed to be spiritual in nature, but this stuff is showing up, and it's eating my lunch to a degree." And here's where it was at the end. I remember I said, "Joe, I believe that to drink or to use is to die. And I want to live. And I want to be useful in this world. I believe that my life depends on this inventory I need to do with you now." Within 2 weeks, I got to run up to Bluffton, South Carolina. I had a little thing to do there one Friday night. I spent the night with my sponsor, and up till midnight, we were going through inventory. And the next morning, we were going through we did a little bit of work on step 6 and 7 and 8 and set up some things on 9. But that's where it shows up today. And I have to share that with you. That's part of my life right now.
You know, as I was listening to Bill, I was reflecting on how any of these steps by themselves are ineffective. They permeate through each other. And, you know, so many people put so much weight on this one step, as if it's the mountain by itself, but it's not. I do believe that addiction and alcoholism are illnesses of isolation. And the opposite of isolation is connection. And without the human connection, you will not survive. Okay? It's a hypothesis. Go out and test it. I do know from my own personal experience that my relationships in my life are a good barometer for me to know how I am doing spiritually. In my acknowledgement of God's presence in my life, of my conscious belief of that presence in my life. And it's really clear what the big book says on page 66 in Resentment Inventory. But with Tarek, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment or constantly judging everyone and everything is infinitely grave. They don't just tell you it's going to kill you, graveyard dead. They say infinitely, as if they're just trying to make death even more powerful than it already is. We found that it is fatal. So two sentences, back to back. "For when Tarek harbors such feelings, he shuts himself off from the sunlight of the spirit that's in you." The insanity of crack cocaine returns for Tarek, and for Tarek to get high is death. A spiritual death. Now, part of recovery involves dying. In the third step, it says we are reborn. To be reborn means you got to die. You guys get that, right? What about you has to die? I think this is a good starting place. Our ideas about the world and the people in it and how they dominate us and how we harbor the feelings to the degree that we shut ourselves off from anything outside of ourselves. So another description of this spiritual malady is all you think about is fucking you all the fucking time. Period. You don't have room to think about anything else. So you have to create the room. And this is how we begin to create the room. To connect. This is where it all starts. And for me, when I sponsor guys, I'm going to give you some best practices. It's not about having 100 names on your inventory list. Do you really think these old-timers back in the Oxford groups in Akron, Ohio, had these massive inventories? How the hell would they do it in 3 hours in Dr. Bob's office? That's not. This is about grosser handicaps. Grosser handicaps. And so if you're about to start a four-step, And I'm not contradicting what your sponsors. Whatever your sponsor says is true, just don't even bother to pay attention to me at this point. But if you're curious, put a timer on for 30 minutes to an hour and ask what your conception of God is to reveal to you who needs to go on this inventory, and just start writing. People and institutions, right? You don't have to do principles because they're confused in the very beginning. Your sponsor will coach you through the principles. Let's focus on people and institutions and see what comes out. And let's say like 50 or 60 names come out and you're like, okay. If you were my sponsor and you came back to me, I'm going to say, okay, I want you to go back and pray, and that list needs to be 20. Because somewhere between 20 and 25, I've listened to enough Fifth Steps to understand the only thing that's changing is the name of the person. It's the same resentments over and over. Right? And so we want to get through this process as quickly. Now look, if you have being molested or being raped or being abused in your inventory, that needs to go on there. Right? Needs to go on there. But we can simplify here. Simplify. You don't need this massive book. Now, I'm a guy that wrote a massive 1-inch binder, and I had to read every single one of those to my sponsor at the time. I don't know if he was sadistic in his nature at the time, but I did every Sunday for like 5 or 6 or 7 Sundays in a row for 3 hours, because he would not expose himself to me for more than 3 hours. He's like, you're sick and you get 3 hours every Sunday and that's it. And you got to read all of these. And that was my experience. But I'm also a guy that believes once you're committed, I don't care what step you're on, you're safe and protected. I'm doing this little experiment here. I've been reaching, every time it comes to my awareness with people, I don't know if I've asked you this question yet. I've been asking people that are long-term sober, I was like, hey, let me ask you a question. Was your obsession completely removed, and you knew you were done, and you knew to the degree that if I did this, I was going to be victorious? And more people are saying, yeah. The commitment was there from the very beginning. Like, we have this common phrase that we're the last house on the block, which I sort of like, because that's when we commit, when there's nothing else. So the question I have for you is, are you committed? Because it'll show up in this inventory if you're committed. See, what happens is our commitments waver. Right? I was talking to a guy outside, and he was talking to me about a girl. And he's early recovery. What I heard was slight hints of commitment wavering. Yeah, it's important that I stay clean and sober, but I got to talk to you. You know, we got to sort of line up my things with this girl so we do them at the same time. And now I'm sort of making some assumptions, but this is what I hear as a sponsor. So one of the words that I hate to hear from a sponsee is, hey, man, I met this girl. Because I know the commitment has just moved. And so this is what we're talking about. The inventory requires a commitment. It really does. Because Bill said it earlier, you know, this decision we made in the third step has little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves. The first things we have to get rid of is this idea that we are a victim. And that's what resentment inventory is really all about. Learning to take responsibility for your existence as a human. Right, that involves going to some dark places sometimes. That's all I got for a second.
You know, and I was thinking on top of page 67. You know, and why I have these things, and I don't like usually what someone's doing. It doesn't meet my standards and earn approval. That showed up in some recent resentment inventory. Some people that were not real close to me, but around me enough, I didn't like that, and they disturbed me to a degree. So there's this fourth step, this resentment prayer up here, and I dig it, you know. And we ask God to help us show the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. This person is perhaps spiritually sick. I can dig that. When a person offended, here's the case. We said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." My experience is going to the prayer, saying the prayer, saying with all my earnestness, on my knees, doesn't clear out that resentment in that moment. My experience. I don't know what the power you're getting access to, have access to, will do for you. What I found was recently, I was taking two men through the work. One was in his, we were kind of moving through the later steps, and one guy was kind of in the middle of this stuff we're doing now, and I was actively sponsoring people, taking them through the work. I've been showing some other people who I've been also working with how to take someone through the work who's been sober for a while. So I was actively working with others, not just newcomers, but helping others help newcomers. And I found that, along with, to the best of my ability, really, practicing these principles in all of our affairs. Guys, this, for the first time, I can just tell you that since I've done inventory, and this is a recent inventory, those resentments have not shown back up in any way that they had in the past. And that's just a recent experience, but that's the effect it produces as a result of going through this work. There's going to be some conversations that are going to happen at the appropriate time with some of these people that made it onto my resentment inventory to further clear those things out. That's what we do, and I'm down with that. But it's a remarkable effect. I feel, and so what's changed? I've got power. I've got real power in my life. God has stepped in, and God's going to do what he does, and I feel it today, and I feel it as a result of this recent inventory.
I love that Bill just touched on the forgiveness prayer, the resentment prayer, the sick man or woman's prayer. But when I sponsor guys, this is what they have to do. When they're done writing the third column, right before they write the fourth column, they have to say this prayer. And I was asking, is the prayer for you or for them? And so this is a spiritual program of action, right? We're supposed to involve our conception of a power greater than ourselves as often as possible. And this is a beautiful way to do that between the third and fourth column. Because what you're asking them, what you're asking your Creator, is to give you just a sliver of an opening to have some compassion for the person or institution you're writing about. And that will give you an opportunity to look at things from an entirely different angle in the fourth column. And it says that the prayer is for us. God, please help me see this person as sick. If I can be driven, they can be driven. If I can lack power, they can lack power. If I can be selfish and self-seeking, and I'm really not intentionally harming people because I am so consumed with myself, the same thing applies to them. Right? But we love to operate in a world where we're the only ones that are allowed to have defects of character. Right? No one else can have any shortcomings or grosser handicaps, only us. And that will set us up to live a selfish and self-centered life. This process is repetitive. And the first step, last night, Carl and I, it's a process of self-examination. And when you get to step two, now we're going to ask you to have an attitude towards a power greater than yourself. It's required. You have to orient yourself towards that power. And can it somehow be the solution to the insanity in the first step? And then you turn out to other people. Now you're thinking to yourself, well, the third step's all about making a decision. I don't think so. It is and it's not. It's a bunch of things. One of the things it says is, God, my Creator, take away my difficulties so that victory over them will bear witness. All right, so that's what Bill and I are sort of doing right now. We're witnessing our experience, and we're describing it to you. We're explicating our life experience in relation to this part of the step work. And now the fourth step is the self-examination. Again, you got to go to that place you don't want to go to, deep down within. And guess what? In the second step, it says that's where the great reality is. So there's scriptures out there that say the better you know yourself, the better you know God. I've been reading a lot of scriptures recently. That's one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. Wherever I turn, I shall be witnessing the face of God. So that means all of you are somehow a manifestation. And so if I've got these resentments in between me and you, then I can't see that. I cannot see that. And that's why the resentment inventory is so important. And don't be delusional. If you're having a problem writing your resentment inventory, it's not because of the inventory. It's because you don't believe anything. You don't believe that there's a connection between writing inventory and sticking a needle back in your arm. That's what's absent. Or sticking a rock on a stem, or smoking meth, or drinking another drink. That's all that's happening. You don't see the connection. And so hopefully it's granted to you, because I don't know if you can willfully make it. Maybe you can, maybe you can't. I just don't know.
Guys, I got one final thing I'd just like to bring to light before I back out.
You shut it down.
Okay, good deal. In the last 5 years, I have one time experienced debilitating fear. And it 100% stemmed from a resentment, which was 100% fancied and not even real. Absolute insanity. The effect it produced in me was a crazy man. Completely manic, paranoid. There's this little thing, we have a saying, it's not real well known where I work, but it is among some people. There's a mentality that can show itself called kill the king, be the king. And that's someone coming from my job. It's usually a resident. And what they're doing is they're putting my name out, things that aren't even true. They're talking to people they shouldn't be talking to. They're getting into business that doesn't belong on their plate. And now I'm fighting for my life in this case. Guys, this went on for 3 days. I was unemployable for 3 days. I couldn't get any work done. I was a terrorist to those around me. Real sweetheart at home, too, I promise you. Guys, I'm absolutely nuts, and I'm coming unglued and a part of the scene. This happened about 3 years in. As it showed itself through this process, and thank God for people around me that care about me enough to pull me aside and say, dude, what the hell are you doing? And square me up. And I have some people that are willing to do that. Thank you. Grateful, truly. Guys, it's not even real. But boy, did it have power over me. And that's what it talks about, fancied or real. And I experienced that. A lot of my resentments are real. But boy, I understand that now to the degree that it talks about in the literature. It absolutely had the power to kill. And it was created by me. And I lived in it. And I reacted to it because it was what was real to me. And again, through the process of the steps and where it shows up and when resentment crops up, and man, I couldn't see it though. I was so consumed in self and fear, I couldn't see it. And again, thrilled that people could bring some things to light for me. But I look back on that. And I've experienced this part of the book, and I see the power that it had. It had more power than any of the other resentments that I've really experienced, because those were real things, real experiences that I had with people. And I'd be remiss if I didn't share that with you. Now, the one thing that didn't happen was the obsession to pick up a drink or a drug. Through that process of even kind of in that moment, I still found working with others, especially newcomers, and again, to the best of my ability, practicing these principles in all my affairs, I was able to move past that. And it's okay, and I've learned from that. Now I've got a story to tell, and I can be useful to others who may be in the middle of something like this, and hopefully I can, you know, help someone else in this way. And that's really it. That wraps up, Tara, kind of my deal on this.
I'm good.
You're good too, Miles?
10 minutes.
Thank you, guys.